Hi, everyone. Welcome to Packers Unscripted from Packers.com. I'm Mike Spofford, sitting next to the one and only Wes Hodkowitz. We're coming to you here from our studios at Lambeau Field. And Wes, I think a place to start today is with a player that we probably didn't quite give proper due yesterday on our first initial wrap-up of the Packers' comeback victory over the Cowboys, and that's Davante Adams.
Right.
Two touchdowns in the game, including obviously the game winner right at the end, just 10 days after taking that hit from Danny Trevathan. It was a minor miracle of sorts that Adams was even able to play in the game, and then for him to go out there and essentially be the hero at the end with the game-winning touchdown catch, just a remarkable week for a young man and a player who's really, really coming into his own here in the NFL.
Yeah, it's funny when you say, you know, we didn't really probably give him enough proper due. There was a lot of due to spread coming out of that game when you look at Aaron Jones, Aaron Rodgers, all the different things, but let's be honest here, Mike. The Packers very well might not win this game if it wasn't for Davante Adams being on the field and contributing the way he contributed. Right off the bat, catches the first pass of the day, I thought really set the tone for him. He was really dynamic on the sidelines, made some terrific catches throughout. The back shoulder catch to start that game-winning series.
Right.
And then you get to that final drive. For him, you know, Rodgers targets him the first time. It's a little low. They have that communication back and forth, just looking at each other. Davante almost in a way challenging Rodgers to throw a better ball, as Rodgers retells it.
Yep.
And then just a terrific, I mean, you want to talk about everything that makes Davante Adams what he is as a football player. I thought this game embodied it. And for him to come back, head injuries are very serious. They're significant. You cannot take any of them lightly. A concussion's a concussion. But for him to be able to progress the way he did out of that, not experience any headaches, not experience any of the symptoms that commonly come with it, light sensitivity and whatnot, was able to practice throughout the course of the week and then obviously get cleared on Friday afternoon. He felt like he was ready. He felt healthy. And he even said, you know, you don't keep taking DayQuil after the cough is gone. So for him, if he's good to go and the doctors clear him, he was going to be on the football field.
Yeah, and you give Adams credit for going out there and doing what he did, especially on the last drive when Jordy Nelson is on the sidelines and unable to get into the game. Now, Mike McCarthy on Monday still didn't clarify necessarily what was up with Jordy Nelson, just again reiterated what he said after the game, which is that he was being evaluated and he wasn't even sure if Nelson would have been available had the game gone to overtime. He did say that some of the reports out there about it being a hamstring injury are not accurate. But aside from that, that's all we know about what was going on with Nelson. So the Packers really needed Davante Adams on that final drive. And even going back to the previous week, I still find it amazing that the only thing, and I don't mean to diminish a concussion, but the only thing he was dealing with after that hit was a concussion when you think about all the other potential injuries that could have occurred.
Yeah, when our guys were showing up at the hospital, we heard about that afterwards, Randall Cobb and Aaron Rodgers and all, you know, Jordy Nelson all talking about when they got there. You know, I think they were sort of bracing themselves for what they were going to see in terms of where he was and what his condition would be. They saw Davante Adams there. He was himself. He was joking. He was laughing. Wanted to get out of the hospital as soon as possible. He did that the following day after being held for observation. I thought that was the biggest miracle in all this, is that there wasn't any structural damage with his neck because of where he took that hit and how violent it was when you look at his mouthpiece coming out and the ribbit off the helmet getting dislodged. I mean, so many different things really made you nervous for his long-term, you know, situation. So, again, not to say that he only walked away with a concussion. You don't want to have concussions, but the fact that he was able to be himself, he was back in the locker room that following Tuesday when the team reported, I think everybody was counting their blessings about that.
And I think what's fun to watch about this going forward is not that anybody's going to catch up to the chemistry that Aaron Rodgers has with Jordy Nelson anytime soon, but we're seeing that gap being closed, so to speak, with Davante Adams and where he's going with the relationship with the quarterback. I know we talked in the offseason after I had interviewed Adams for a story for the Packers yearbook and talking to him about his chemistry with Rodgers. You started to see it last year with the 12 touchdowns in the regular season, that Monday night game in Philadelphia, which I still think is the best game that I've seen Adams have in a Packers uniform, was very impressive. You see the chemistry developing, and then you mention it when he comes back to the huddle after the missed touchdown connection and basically just signals Rodgers with his eyes, throw it again, you can count on me. And Rodgers trusts him enough to say, okay, yeah, I will throw a better ball, and I trust him to make it. I don't need to call another play. That speaks volumes as to where these two guys are in Adams' fourth year in this offense.
Yeah, I mean, that's expert-level stuff for a receiver to be able to do that and have, you know, he still is only 24 years old. He's a young guy. I think he was only 21 when he entered this league. So for him to be able to develop that rapport with Rodgers as quickly as he has says a lot about Adams. I thought the other thing that spoke a lot about him was he was asked about Danny Trevathan in the hit and in his communication with him afterwards.
Yeah.
You know, Randall Cobb was a teammate of Trevathan's going back to their days together at Kentucky. He helped put them in contact with each other. The PR departments worked with them to get them in contact with each other. Trevathan actually extended an apology to him. You know, offered his sincere regret. And then when asked about it, you know, Adam said in the postgame locker room that he didn't have any resentment at him. He doesn't think he's a dirty player at all. He just made a mistake. And those plays need to be taken out of the game. But at the same time, he didn't feel like that was a reflection as Danny Trevathan, the man.
Yeah.
It's just something that happened, and it was unfortunate.
Yeah, it's a mature response on Adam's part to say, hey, it was a dirty hit, but he's not a dirty player. And those kinds of things happen at full speed with the athletes and the abilities that these guys have on a football field.
Yeah, and credit to Trevathan, too, for reaching out. I remember Randall Cobb said that immediately, that he had reached out to, you know, try to extend that olive branch.
Yeah, all right. Well, with that, we're going to throw it to a break. Back with more on Packers Unscripted right after this. Welcome back to Packers Unscripted. Mike Spofford in this chair, Wes Hodkiewicz in that one. And Wes, the topic of our insider inbox, I think that won't go away here in these first couple of days after the Packers' victory over the Cowboys, is the 4th-and-1, the replay review with Ezekiel Elliott late in the fourth quarter. There's a lot going on here. First off, you have an overhead camera that is only used at select NFL games,
right,
depending on the broadcast network and the crew and whatnot. But it was used at this game, which I think is the only reason this was reviewed at all, is because you had the overhead camera. But then you wonder, is the overhead camera actually at the proper angle, you know, or are there some optic problems,
right,
with exactly what you're seeing as far as where the ball is? And then there's the question of Elliott reaching the ball out, but then pulling it back before the whistle is blown and before the play seems to actually be blown dead. I don't know where you want to start with all that, but that's what's being tossed around here, and it's confusing and it's complicated.
Yeah, and I think that's the reason why when you said it's been a big question that we've received in the inbox this week, I don't really know if I've had an answer for it,
yeah,
to be quite honest with you, because there really are so many different aspects to this. There's so many,
yeah,
factors. First and foremost, I wasn't a fan of the whole process. And the one thing, okay, let's take the eye in the sky camera at face value. Let's say it's correct.
Okay.
Zeke Elliott pulls the ball out there and then pulls it back. He pushes it towards where the line to gain is and then pulls it back. As some people said in the inbox, and one of the big comments was, well, if a running back is running and, you know, he's facing a defender and decides to move backwards in order to avoid him but then gets tackled, they don't spot the ball where he was 2 yards ago.
Right.
They spot it where he gets tackled.
Correct.
So I don't even know, again, if everything's equal, I don't even know if that's the right call. And then also how they position it. The tip of the ball touches the 19.5-yard line, so then they put the center of it there. Again, don't get me started on the subjectivity of measurements on these things. It's the thing I have the biggest issue with in professional football.
Yeah.
But getting back to the eye in the sky camera, there is something to be said for the geometry of it,
yeah,
and exactly where it's pointing and how it looks. Objects in the mirror sometimes are closer than they appear. So, I mean, it really is. It's a thing that when people have asked, I sympathize with what they're saying, but I don't know if I've necessarily had an answer for it.
Yeah, I don't know if I do either. I think the thing that bothers people a lot, the biggest thing that bothers people is the fact that the way the replay review was called,
right,
and how the call was changed is that the play was looked at the same way as the first down line being like the goal line, that as,
right,
soon as the ball crosses the plane of a goal line, that's a touchdown no matter what happens after that, as,
yeah,
long as even if the player were to fumble the ball, so to speak. If that ball is in his possession and crosses the plane of the goal line, it's a touchdown and the play is over. that fourth and one review was treated the same way. And I'm with you that I don't know if that's really the correct ruling or not. Now, that being said, and I think the whole geometry thing with where exactly the overhead camera is really interesting and something that I'd love a physics professor to actually show a diagram and maybe explain how that the optics of that maybe fooled all of us and fooled the officials looking at it on the replay. All that being said, I thought it was interesting that that Mike McCarthy decided not to get caught up in all of this.
Yeah.
And as the head coach of his football team, his message to the team when they reviewed that play on Monday in the film session and everything was, hey, there's a running back sticking the ball out there. Why isn't somebody knocking it out of his hand, or at least trying to get the turnover, and then you don't have to worry about the first down or not? So from the coaching perspective, there's a whole nother angle of this, and that's what Mike McCarthy's focused on with his defense.
Yeah, I thought it was a really mature viewpoint from McCarthy to take with his team, because it wasn't focused on the refs. It almost reminds me a little bit of like a boxing fight or a UFC fight where it's like you're leaving it in the judge's hands.
Yeah.
Well, if you just take care of your own business there, it doesn't even matter where the ball was.
That ball was out there and was ripe for the pickings, as they say.
Now, at the same time, I sympathize has kind of been my word today. I feel for what the linebackers are going through there, because their primary objective is to stop arguably the NFL's best running back.
Right.
I don't think I would have anticipated that ball getting put out there, but with the levels of, you know, the pursuit and finish and how the Packers preach that philosophy, that's an aspect of it. You need to look for the football. And in that particular case, Elliott put it out there. It ended up benefiting him, but it was a big risk he took in a big situation, because you and I both know the further away the ball is from your body, the more susceptible it is to being punched out.
Yeah, no question. And I think going back to the very first point that I made with this, the Packers, sometimes you're a victim of your own success, in that if the Packers aren't at 325 in the Fox America's game of the week with all the extra cameras, including, you know, that eye in the sky cam, there is no camera angle that's going to overturn where the officials initially spotted the ball short of the first down, and the Packers get the fourth down stop, and we're spending potentially, you know, the whole next week talking about the defense making the great stop to win the game as opposed to Aaron Rodgers' comeback. But here we are and talking about camera angles and geometry instead.
Yeah, and I'm very curious now, as we go throughout the rest of the season and maybe even in the offseason we get to the owners' meetings, if there's going to be any discussion about that eye in the sky camera, because it is a different avenue of being able to review plays, but at the same time, just because you have another camera angle doesn't always make it right.
Yeah, I tend to agree with you, and I wonder if there is going to be some discussion about that. But with that, we're going to throw it to a break. Back with more on Packers Unscripted right after this. Welcome back to Packers Unscripted. Mike Spofford right here, Wes Hodkowitz over there. And Wes, continuing with our theme of maybe the topics that we overlooked a little bit when we first got back from Dallas and began reviewing the game, the Green Bay Packers tight ends, Martellus Bennett, Lance Kendricks, Richard Rodgers, all have a catch in this game. I believe it's five catches total amongst the three tight ends. And boy, as it turns out, all those catches were pretty important.
Yeah, they were, Mike, and five catches for 93 yards, and it was just an interesting thing when I went back and looked at the stats on this. It's coincidental that all five catches came on drives in which the Packers scored a touchdown. I thought Martellus Bennett had one of his best, if not his best, game as a Packer so far. That 33-yard pass from Aaron Rodgers was just an absolute thing of beauty.
Great throw, great catch.
Yeah, and for Martellus Bennett to look through all the debris in the secondary and find that football, bring it in, a remarkable play by him. He also ended up having, I believe it was a 14-yard catch during that final game-winning drive.
The second play.
Yep. And that really was the biggest indicator of me of what Martellus Bennett does. When you get him into open field, 6'6", 275 pounds, and now you're a 5'11", 6-foot defensive back, 180, 190 pounds, talk about a mismatch. I mean, he's a difference maker in that way, and I thought he gave them a really strong performance. Lance Kendricks has a 24-yard catch early on to get them going. And Richard Rodgers just made a terrific play on the ball on that 2nd-and-8 play, and Aaron Rodgers putting it right where he can get it away from Orlando Scandrick. I just thought if it's one player, if you're talking about one tight end and you get five catches for 93 yards, that's a heck of a day at the tight end position.
Yeah, that's just what I was going to say, is that most teams, you know, really only use one tight end regularly in the passing game. And as you said, if your tight end on a given day has five catches for 93 yards, you're singing his praises as to how valuable he is. It's just that, as it turns out, the Packers use all three of these guys. Rodgers went to all three of them in different situations in the game against Dallas. And I think the most important thing going forward, we've seen, obviously, Richard Rodgers in this offense, and Aaron Rodgers knows what he can do. The throw against Scandrick there one-on-one shows that Aaron Rodgers trusts, you know, his tight end who's been in this offense now for 4 years. But we're seeing Martellus Bennett, I think, getting more and more comfortable, more and more on the same page with Aaron Rodgers, just assimilating himself into this offense that much more. And the more I look at the All-22 film as well, I get impressed with Martellus Bennett's blocking more and more every day.
Yeah, you want to even look at that. I think it was the 18-yard scramble that Rodgers had. Bennett's awareness to leave his route and then to start looking for a hat was incredible. And really, him, Rodgers, being able to extend that as long as he did was a credit to Bennett being able to get on that defensive back. Because, again, that is what you get out of him. When he's in the second level, or even when he's at the line of scrimmage, he can block, and everybody knows he can block. And when the Packers signed him this offseason, there was the understanding that this can be a difference-making type player in the middle of the field. He can be a red zone target for Aaron Rodgers, but he also is a traditional inline blocker as well. He's a total package in that way. So that was a great, I thought, demonstration, a really great illustration of what he can do downfield when he isn't by the football to still make an impact in a football game.
Yeah, and you mentioned before the whole mismatch idea. When you look at that scramble by Rodgers and Bennett then is blocking on a defensive back, he basically blocks him with one arm and just strong arms him right out of bounds. I mean, that it's a mismatch sometimes in the blocking aspect too, and Martellus knows when he's got that advantage and he's going
to
use it.
Yeah, absolutely. And the other thing too, to give a little bit of shout out to Kendricks, he had the one catch for 24 yards, but also he's been a big contributor on special teams as well. And if you look at it, there's been a lot of mixing and matching with their special teams units. Lance Kendricks has been a pretty steady presence there for Ron Zook, and I think the Packers knew they were getting that throughout the offseason program. And then also Richard Rodgers, he just had six snaps in that game. He had the one catch, but has been doing his job consistently and has been accepting a new role this year, which I think says a lot about him and his willingness to do what the team is asking.
Yeah, no question about it. With that, we'll throw it to another break. Back with more on Packers Unscripted right after this. Welcome back to Packers Unscripted. Mike Spofford alongside Wes Hodkiewicz. And Wes, now that the entirety of Week 5 is in the books in the NFL, a couple of things to touch on here before we go. The Carolina Panthers went into Ford Field in Detroit and knocked off the Lions, which improved Carolina to 4-1, knocked Detroit down to 3-2, and then the Packers now sitting in first place alone in the NFC North at 4-1. But along with that, the Philadelphia Eagles improved to 4-1, and so now coming up this week, we have a Thursday night game between a pair of 4-1 teams. So somebody after Week 6 in the NFC is guaranteed to be 5-1, barring an overtime tie. But more importantly for the Packers in the immediate future here, as they get ready to play the Minnesota Vikings, we saw the Vikings pull out a close 3-point victory over the Chicago Bears on Monday Night Football. And it looks like the Packers have to be prepared for Case Keenum at quarterback rather than Sam Bradford, because Bradford didn't even make it through the first half coming back from his knee injury.
Yeah, a part of me is actually, it was funny, and I obviously don't have a rooting interest in any of these games, but a part of me did want the Bears to win this just because Sam Bradford had no business playing in this game.
Yeah.
I mean, I said that you and I were texting last night during this thing, and he looked like a guy that was injured. Like, he looked like a guy that had issues with his knee that did not appear to be resolved.
Yeah.
So for the Vikings to play him for the whole first half, especially, I'm not saying Case Keenum is going to the Hall of Fame or anything, but he's a competent NFL quarterback. He's been a starting quarterback. He has 27 touchdowns and 20 interceptions in his career. He's serviceable. I don't know why Sam Bradford was playing in this game. And then for the Vikings to be able to still come back and win this, I mean, I guess they're fortunate that they're playing the Bears, because I don't know a lot of other situations they could have survived basically punting their first five series away and then, you know, making an adjustment after that. But whatever the case may be, they found that it looks like Jerick McKinnon is right where they need him to be right now. A former high draft pick, solid, I think, as they come. Has never been the standout guy, but as much as made out of Latavius Murray, I think McKinnon really took that job and ran with it last night.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say too. In the wake of Dalvin Cook's season-ending injury a week ago for the Minnesota Vikings, I think we all thought, you know, okay, here comes the Latavius Murray show. This was the free agent running back that the Vikings brought in. But you're right, Jerick McKinnon took the reins. And as much as the Packers are going to, I think, prepare for Case Keenum at quarterback, they have to be prepared for a lot of Jerick McKinnon, both in the running and the passing games, I think, for the Vikings come Sunday afternoon in Minneapolis.
Yeah, the big thing for the Vikings, I was trying to figure out what they have offensively outside of that. And I know that sounds weird because it's not like McKinnon's even started a game yet. But, you know, Stephon Diggs only gets held to one catch for 4 yards. I mean, they've had different guys step up, but nobody consistently be that guy. I mean, Adam Thielen, in theory, is the guy that they're going to be having to keep an eye on this upcoming week. But again,
well, Thielen had the huge game out here.
He did.
And he had at Lambeau Field 200 yards.
Yeah. So I mean, he's been one of the guys. But then last night only had 5 catches for 34 yards. So trying to figure out what they have there is going to be something. And then defensively, you know what the Vikings bring to the table. They're one of the best.
Yeah, and we'll be talking about this more as the week goes along. But with Minnesota 3-2, Detroit 3-2, and playing the Saints, I believe,
yes,
and then the Packers at 4-1 going to Minneapolis, the Packers have a chance, obviously, to get to 5-1 and hold on to first place. Or at the end of week 6, there could be a 3-way tie for first place because everybody could end up at 4-2. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah, that's parity for you, Michael.
All right.
What happens.
All right, and with that, that's a wrap on this edition of Packers Unscripted. Be sure to follow all of our coverage of the team on Packers.com. On Twitter, he's at Wes Hodd. I'm at Mike Spofford, at Packers for the team account. Thanks for tuning in, everybody. We'll see you next time.